Cabernet tends to be the sort of Errol Flynn of the grape varieties.
The most expensive beer in history.
People will turn around to me and say, oh, I'm just making gin while I wait for my whiskey to get ready.
Because wine is an adventure.
Conventional winemakers who just condemn all natural wine as faulty.
The prestigious title of Sake Samurai.
Looking at whiskey in more of an artful culinary way.
They kind of look at it as a novelty more than anything. The guy from the rock bands is making wine.
This is the Drinks Adventures podcast. I'm James Atkinson, and this is the show where I speak to some of the world's most exciting producers of beer, wine, and spirits and uncover trends and issues in the drinks industry today. Hop Nation Brewing Company was founded in Footscray, Melbourne in 2014 by winemaking friends Sam Hambaugh and Duncan Gibson. While their company started out making hoppy beers, Sam and Duncan have continued to expand into new and intriguing territories. They have a side label for sour beers, Site Fermentation Project, and they've returned to winemaking with an affiliated brand, Site Wine. Hop Nation is also one of many craft breweries to have diversified into alcoholic seltzer, with the creation of another new brand, Ray, in 2020. While in Melbourne for Good Beer Week a few weeks ago, I dropped by Hop Nation's original site in Footscray for a long overdue interview with Sam. Our catch-up turned out to be well-timed, as Hop Nation dominated proceedings at the Australian International Beer Awards the following night. The company picked up a remarkable 4 trophies, including one of the major awards, Champion Medium Australian Brewery, and they also picked up Best Pilsner for Rattenhund, which you'll hear me discuss with Sam in this interview. These achievements follow Hop Nation's recent expansion into a new production brewery in Mornington, which has enabled the company to fine-tune its beers. So there was plenty to talk about with Sam, and that's without even mentioning the 2021 release of the Kalash, their bourbon barrel-aged imperial stout that drops around the time this episode goes to air. Same as in 2020, there's a second version of the Kalash coming out this year, which you heard foreshadowed by David Baker of Victoria's Bakery Hill Distillery back in season 3 of this podcast.
We sent some barrels to a brewery, Hop Nation, about 12 months ago, because they wanted to see how their beers would develop in whiskey casks. So we said goodbye to half a dozen of our barrels and then had the phone call that the beers were ready, would you like to go down and try them, and they were fantastic.
And perhaps you can expect more barrel-aged beers from Hop Nation, which Sam reveals will soon begin distilling whiskey, gin and brandy as the latest additions to its impressive beverage portfolio. Well, Sam Hambaugh, thanks so much for joining me on the Drinks Adventures podcast.
Cheers, James. Yeah, thanks for coming down. I know you just ran from the airport on your way into joining Good Beer Week. So, yeah, thanks for dropping by.
Well, I've got a beer in my hand about an hour after touching down, so that's about the most seamless arrival I could possibly imagine. Looking back on 2020, you know, most breweries I was seeing were kind of battening down the hatches and thinking about how they were going to get through that difficult period. And then we hear the announcement that Hop Nation's taken over a new premises in the Mornington Peninsula. So it was kind of a year when you guys expanded, really. How did that kind of all transpire?
Yeah, it was definitely a weird year to make decisions, but we had had a plan in the works to develop in the site just next to us and expand into that. Unfortunately, due to council and Port of Melbourne regulations, we just couldn't get it through. It was mainly because we're in the Coote Island exclusion zone. So based on the petroleum explosion it was 20 years ago, there's a big circle around Coote Island now.
Right.
And you can't have a congregation of people in it without a reason. And
right.
We struggled with that reason, so.
I think you've got a reason.
Yeah. Don't worry, I've told
But they have a reason.
That.
They have a reason too.
So, you know, bulletproof glass and extractor fans.
Yeah.
You know, all the parameters that they put in didn't make sense. And we knew that we had to do something soon to, you know, bring our beer back in-house and really push forward with our beers. And this opportunity came up and, you know, I used to live in Mornington and I knew the area and we knew the site and we thought, you know, no matter the timing's a bit weird, we just wanted to kind of, take advantage of being able to walk into a facility that we weren't commissioning from the start, because we're probably looking at 3 to 4 years before our new site would be ready, but this kind of solved a couple of those issues all in one.
What were you doing in the interim? You obviously contract brewing some beers around the place.
Yeah, so we kind of filled this place out and ran it, you know, at 150% for a few years. And we teamed up with Brick Lane and we were producing a few of our beers there. I guess with the plan that we always wanted to bring it back, we just needed to kind of prove a bit of sales run to really get more money out of the bank.
You guys launched with the name Hop Nation, and then you've evolved so far beyond hoppy styles of beers. It's still a big part of what you do, but was it always part of the plan that you were going to be moving into sours? Did you think you would have the wine offshoot? Did you ever imagine yourselves doing seltzers, or has it just been kind of something that's just been a continuous evolution?
Initially, you know, we wanted to do nation-based hop-driven beers, so a New Zealand hop beer, American hop beer, and Australian hop beer within their styles, and we did that for a little while with the Pilsner, the Australian IPA, and then we went to make the New Zealand double, and it just, we kind of came to the point that the beer would be better if we chose hops that were kind of combined and made the beer better. So we thought, well, what's the point of pigeonholing ourselves and at that point we thought, let's just try and make the best beers we can. While we're still looking at hop driven beers, we just didn't want to focus just on national styles. Sours were kind of an evolution of interest and what we were drinking, and kind of that role overlap with wine made the transition a little bit easier for us to play around with. Wine, we actually did the whole way through. We just have started making a bit more and putting some money into it because I guess we can. There's a bit more time now. Seltzer, no, I didn't think we'd be making seltzer, but I'm not sure anyone did, you know, when we started. But it's fun, and it's another product that we can make and have fun with, and it's in a different market. Yeah,
we'll come on to that. But with the wine, maybe just explain, you and Duncan had a background in making wine, is that correct?
Yeah. So Duncan and I both studied wine. I'd studied in Adelaide, him in New Zealand. And we met when we were making wine over there. I moved over to the Moreton Peninsula and started making wine for a company there, and Duncan the Yarra Valley. And we both brewed over in New Zealand, and we were, you know, chatting one day, and both of us kind of had an interest in starting a wine brand, but at that stage it's much harder to enter the market financially and just how to get it off the ground, I guess. So beer, we had a few recipes, and we launched with a couple that we'd been working on, we'd made for a few years back in New Zealand. In winter in a winery, there's always opportunity to use the gear at the back of the winery because it's not getting utilised, so we always made beer during winter, and that's kind of where the beer company started, and it kind of ran off the ground to the point where we thought we had to move from contracting to doing it properly, otherwise there's no point. And that's kind of when the facility here in Footscray came off the ground in end of 2015. And yeah, brewed and slowly added tanks here until it was full. I guess we started pretty slowly. You know, you see some people getting injected with cash and growing fast, but we kind of slowly got it off the ground and grew it just from the brew pub, which is, you know, it's been, a reasonable but challenging journey, but yeah, there's been some stepping stones, I guess. And Mornington was like a one we were really pushing for. As much as it's fun brewing here, there's definitely consistency challenges you get in making beer the same and good of quality with equipment like this. So where we are now,
it's pretty rustic equipment here, do you?
Yeah, it's pretty manual. If it's cold or the brewer's tired, you know, it can be different. But where we are now, there's parameters in place to bring that quality and consistency. Our beers are the best they've been, or the most consistent anyway. So I think every step we make to do it better, you know, it's just, it takes time.
Yeah.
You don't always come out swinging. It takes a while to learn each category. Yeah.
Yeah. And so when did you first introduce the site wine range, and how has that kind of evolved since then?
So we initially, it was a vineyard that I used to take care of, and the guy that owned it was he got ill, and we approached him and we started leasing it off him. That's in Red Hill in Mornington. And we also get some fruit from, we bought cherries for our annual sour lapin, which we make, the sour cherry bread. And he also grows grapes, and we started buying those as well. And that's up near Beechworth. And that's, we make some fun wines from those. But yeah, the wine is evolving, but it never stopped. We released it in cans initially, but maybe we were a little bit early, and we didn't have the canning line to put them in what's on trend, I guess, the smaller cans. And we also were putting premium barrel-aged hand-picked Pinot in them and asking the right price for it.
Yeah.
Well, every other canned wine out there was, you know, pretty much cask wine in a can. So we had those challenges, and we decided to move back to bottles, and I think it's got a better home there. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, where does the wine get sold? Is it mostly over your own bar, or...?
The bar, and then, just with our similar clients, I guess, as beer and those relationships that we have. Bottle shops and a few bars.
Are they natural wines? Would you define them like that, or how do you feel about that kind of terminology?
They're within the category. They're not hardcore natural wines. I guess in a way we only manage one of the vineyards ourselves, and we run it organically, but the other ones run conventionally. But we don't add yeast. We add minimal sulfur at bottling. So it's pretty hands-off, but we wanted to still make good wine without risking, I guess, that borderline of some faulty wines out there. I mean, both Doug and I came from making conventional wines for companies, but we like drinking the other spectrum, and we kind of use both those worlds to make the wines that we do.
Yeah.
So yeah, we use a lot of whole bunch. It's mainly all barrel aged, and yeah, we don't do much. I guess it's pretty hands off. Once it's in barrel, there's not really much happening until bottling. So time wise, there's a little peak season, but it's actually pretty low maintenance once it's in barrel.
Tell me about the Pilsner. Pete Mitchum from Radio Brews News, my old colleague at that podcast, he's been telling all and sundry about this Pilsner of yours. Is that a new addition to the range?
It is. It's something we've released. We've talked about it for a while, and we just haven't had the tank space. And Tim, one of our brewers trained in Germany, his passion is Pilsner. And that lager that he kind of drunk and learned and trained with over there. And he had this idea, and he's got a little, he won't like me saying this, but he's got a little shitty ratty dog. And we thought, you know, we need to name it after your idea. So it's Rattenhund, which is rat dog. So we gave it everything that it, you know, we thought it needed to make that traditional style. So your decoction mash, floor malted grain from Cryer, I think. Okay. I'm not sure exactly where it came from in the end. And then some noble hops. And yeast that we worked with Bluestone, which is a Victorian yeast company, which are doing great things, and a lot of people are starting to have a conversation with them instead of importing their own yeast. Gave it its full 6 weeks lagering and 8-degree fermentation, and we're kind of pretty excited by it. We didn't realise other people were going to get excited. I actually initially thought, how are we going to sell this? But people, I think, are excited about something that's not hazy and not sweet, which is...
Or sour.
which is great, you know, I think, if more people get excited about that style, the better it is for beer, really, because it's all about the purity of the beer, not about the adjuncts, which is great.
With all these different products, like, what's the engine room of the Hop Nation business? Like, what's the beer that keeps the business, keeps the lights on for you?
For us, it's the Hart Pale Ale, which I think is Australia's drinking category.
Yeah.
And then
no surprises there. No.
And then our two IPAs, the J Juice and the Chop. They're the three kind of biggest sellers by a reasonable way for us.
Let's talk about the Kalash, because I don't really know the backstory to that beer. I suppose being in Sydney, I hadn't really been aware that it had been a beer that had been around for too long until you generously sent me up a couple of samples of, I think it must have been last year's release. How did that beer start and how's it evolved?
Initially it was 2016 and we had access to a lot of larger format wine barrels, so the 500 litre barrels. And then, ever since then we've made it each year and the recipe's evolved.
So the first year it was X wine barrels. It wasn't with a whiskey profile that you've moved to.
Yeah. And that has its own challenges, microbial challenges. And I think the flavour, we're much happier where it is with bourbon. I think it's kind of cliche that bourbon barrel aged stout, but it's delicious for a reason. Second year we moved to port, sherry and whiskey barrels and made a blend and released them individually and also as a blend. And then, we found a good supplier and we thought they were a good supplier of bourbon barrels, but now we started importing them directly. Just they're fresher and you can choose which ones you want, which has been really good as well.
I think I saw a picture on social media actually of a shipment of barrels that was like you and Boat Rocker were kind of splitting it or something like that.
Yeah, and that's been good. I mean, when you get your barrels, you want to pull the bung, look in and see it wet still and it's fresh and you're going to get the best out of the flavour and they're not going to leak, etc. A couple of times we've got them and they've looked like they've been sitting in a junkyard for a year and they're dry and empty and leak like a sieve. So, we've experienced it with, the whiskey one we did with Bakery Hill when they came almost too wet, where we all had a glass of whiskey while we're filling them. And that's fun as well. And I think there's a nice medium in between.
Yeah, well, I was going to come on to that because I do love the style of, bourbon barrel aged imperial stout. I think there's something about it. It can be a little bit generic, though. It can be they can be very similar to one another, even though they're very enjoyable to drink. But the Bakery Hill one, I don't think I've ever had a whiskey barrel aged stout that had so much whiskey in the beer. And I think it weighed in at 13.7%. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it was pretty awesome to be drinking this beer and knowing you were really able to taste the house character of Bakery Hill as well, which is such an underrated distillery.
And we didn't really know what it was going to be like. And when we put it together, people got, partly because it was different and obvious and delicious, but people got excited by it. And now we gave those barrels back to them and they made a Kalash barrel aged whiskey called Blunderbuss. And now we've been back and forth 2 or 3 years now. And that whiskey's delicious as well. And it has that kind of chocolatey character of the Kalash. And it's been good. I'm glad it started and it's fun. We've also made a rum one this year, which is, we'll see, it's getting blended next week. I'm not 100% convinced rum works in this style, but it's also a bit of fun. We're only doing a few kegs for the launch in a couple of weeks, so people can taste the base beer in different barrels as well as some back vintage stuff.
But the Kalash Bourbon Barrel Aged is sort of the flagship, I guess, and then you've got the Bakery Hill one is going to be coming out again as a second packaged alternative, and then the rum one that you mentioned, which is...
Yeah, we'll just be a few kegs for fun and events and just to, a good talking point. But, we'll see. If it comes out well, we might package it next year, but, two's good. Three might be a crowd. We'll see how they go. back to 440 mils again this year. They've gone, through our packaging development history from bottles to the big cans to the small cans and back.
Cool. We mentioned the S word seltzer a little bit earlier on. Tell me how you sort of decided to jump in on that trend.
We've talked about doing a cider over the time and it wasn't, we wanted to have an offering at the brew pub that we made it all, I guess, and it's part of the drive. But we knew there was going to be a growth in the area, you know, talking about the States, but also the amount of times I go to gatherings and people have a six pack of UDLs or, you know, bourbon and Cokes, and you watch these semi-healthy people drink, you know, how many grams of sugar. And I was like, it kind of makes sense. Everything we do kind of wants to make sense a little bit. And yeah, we developed the first couple, we poured down the drain. They were terrible because we didn't really, you know, if COVID wasn't here, we probably would have flown over to the States and done some more research, but we just had a go and experimented and then kind of developed the base and the techniques and invested in some more equipment. And then, yeah, the style, I mean, there's a box somewhere with all the different styles of branding that we went with, but we wanted it to be semi from here, so we used the word Ray from Footscray to show, you know, kind of that it was from us in a way, and then mess around with some flavors, and then before you know it, yeah, we've got a fridge full of pastel cans with alcoholic soda water in
it. What is it with pastels and seltzer? Can someone tell me?
Yeah, I still don't know.
I think the marketers call it category wayfinding. You know, like if it's pastels, people know it's seltzer.
Yeah, there is something in that category. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I mean, we definitely looked at what was happening around the place and we had all these ideas and then we thought, let's just keep it simple. I guess we knew we were one of the first in the markets and it was probably going to happen, so we had a go with it. We did start with the 375ml can, and one thing is we really hustled to get the upgrades on the canning line to be able to do the sleeks,
yep.
Which I think are a category defining thing. Not everyone's doing it, but I think you know, when they see it, people think it's a seltzer or an RTD. So,
and you're seeing like, you know, repeat purchase and genuine consumer interest in them?
Yeah, I think there is. I mean, one thing, like, credit to the team, people say that they like the flavour of it, I mean, or the taste of it, which has been one of our main challenges. But yeah, there is interest in it. I mean, you look at the social media breakdown compared to the beer and it's very different. It's almost opposite. So, you know, from male to female and age group, kind of got shifts like that, but it's brought more people to Hop Nation, and Hop Nation's brought a few people to Ray, so they kind of work together in that respect. But yeah, I don't know where it's going to go from here with Ray. We'll see. Probably just be, I don't know. Got to get a double one out there, but I don't know how we're going to do that yet.
So now that you've got the, you know, the second bigger brewery out at Mornington, how do you sort of split up the production of the beers?
Yeah, so here in Footscray, we're mainly focused on the sours and some collab beers. Down there is all our clean core range beers as well as the clean specialties. So yeah, we've diced with Danger for quite a while doing sours in the same brewery, and we don't do that anymore. Yeah, right. We got away with it, I think. Hopefully. So, but yeah, now we're just kind of, yeah, it's, yeah. I know some people do, but it's just one of those things that when you lose a whole larger tank of beer is, you know, pretty crushing for everyone.
Yeah.
Through, you know, we test all our beers now and try and keep a close eye on it and then keep the sours here and separate equipment. And we've got its own little canning line here as well. But we have some really good plans for this site. There's going to be a really nice parkland around here with the new tunnel coming in within the next couple of years. So we will activate this as a really nice space as we go. And we've also, to add in the mix, yeah, we've got a still getting installed in a few months. So another kind of game and fun to start.
You guys kind of remind me of Boat Rocker a little bit, just because, you know, they've got their fingers in so many pies. You know, there's pretty much no beverage category that is untouched. I mean, I suppose they don't really do wine, But they've had a still for a while and have been making gin and whiskey and all that kind of stuff. What are you going to be doing with the still?
With the new licensing and the combination of the producer's license, it allows you to have an offering of all kinds when people come. But obviously the focus will be beer, but we want to make some gin and put down some Calvados and whiskey, the two kind of are part of the plan.
And I believe that you guys are helping out Garage Project by brewing some of their beers for them or with them out at Mornington. Was it kind of a thing where you had, excess capacity that you needed to fill, or how did that relationship evolve?
There was excess room there, and we thought part of the business plan was to do some contract brewing. To be honest, I actually can't remember how the conversation started, but it wasn't long before, I know they want to do something out in Australia, and the conversation started that we'd brew some of their beers, and it's been really good. All the recipes are challenging and fun for the team to do. It's always new and interesting, which is kind of what we're doing as well in some of our beers. So they're good to work with. They get access to some great ingredients as well. I'm not sure, because of COVID, they haven't actually been over themselves yet, so we're looking forward to hosting them and not just yelling at the screen. which I'm sure is the truth for a lot of people, but I think it's good. And while we have space, contract brewing's a good thing to challenge everyone, also for cash flow.
What does the future hold for you guys? Like where do you see the business going, in the next 5 to 10 years?
Mornington's been a great site, and we want to put a bar on there as well, which we've got an application in.
Has that ever had a bar there?
It hasn't. No. It's got a giant office at the front, which we don't use really. Everyone gets way too much space. We'll develop that. We'll keep seeing how we go. No kind of epiphany answer, just run a good business and keep making good beer and see where we end up.
Have you needed to change your ownership structure or raise capital in order to do the expansion that you've done in the last couple of years?
No, thankfully we had enough of a track record that the banks were okay with lending us money, so it's still predominantly just Duncan and I, and we've kind of wanted to keep it that way. And thankfully, we're in a lot of debt, but we're managing it through sales, so it's ticking along in a good direction. And we'll see if we get motivated and excited and want to do something stupid, we might have to. But at the moment, we're ticking along. Yeah.
Where's the best place for people to find your beers? Do you sell direct?
We sell direct across the East Coast and Victoria, and then and distribute in the other states.
And I said beers, but obviously I meant your beverages. Is that the whole range?
Yeah, mate, we are the guys. We have a sales team now that are out and about that sell all our beverages now. Yeah, and that's part of the plan, is to develop that and make the most of the door knocking and the hellos to pubs, I guess. It's a slog sales, and I'm sure every salesperson out there would know that. But we also have opened up a restaurant in West Footscray, which serves our beers alongside some really good food, which is something that we haven't been able to do here at the brewery because we couldn't get the food license.
What's the restaurant? Tell us about that.
So it's called Zymergy. Which is kind of the name comes from the art of fermentation, and the chef that he was the chef at Paringa Winery when I was working with him. He owns
Paringa Estate in Mornington Peninsula. I drink a lot of their Pinot, that's for sure.
Yeah, so that was where we used to work, and the chef there been part of the group there that have made that happen. And it's a beer garden with 15 of our beers, as well as, that we've got a lot of stuff fermenting in that place, all their own kojis and soys and different things. So it's like a, something we always wanted to step up into is food and beer here. We do offer pies and chips, but I mean, I think beer's come a long way now that people want to be able to drink good beers and eat good food in the same place, and that's where brew pubs are moving to, and we wanted to do that, you know, that kind of spark during COVID when the announcement was there was going to be no indoor drinking or for potentially a year, which changed, but that is mainly a beer garden, so we saw the site and kind of took the lease on as a pop-up, and now we're permanent.
It's going well?
Yeah, no, it's been good. I mean, I think it's lifted the bar of the experience of, you know, having our beers and eating food, and yeah, summer's been really good there, and winter, I'm just trying to get a tent installed in the backyard, which I feel like I'm dealing with a couple of carnies to make that happen, but it's happening. Yeah. I'm going to dig some holes first.
Awesome. Well, Sam, we've been talking about this for a couple of years now, so it's good to finally have you on the show, and thanks for your hospitality here in Footscray.
No, thank you for dropping by, and yeah, we should open up one of these calashes before we go.
Absolutely. Cheers.
The Drinks Adventures podcast is produced by me, James Atkinson, with additional production and mixing by Dave Robertson. You can find complete transcripts, links, and other information on the show at drinksadventures.com.au. You can follow me on all social media platforms at By James Atkinson. Like my Facebook page, James Atkinson Drinks Adventures, to be kept informed of podcast giveaways and other news about the show. The Drinks Adventures podcast needs your support as listeners. Please do us a favour and leave an honest review and rating for the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. We love hearing your feedback, and it helps inform other people this is a show worth listening to. Or simply drop us a line at hello@drinksadventures.com.au.